Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today's Monday, February 12th, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hello, Melody. Happy Monday. Hello.
Happy Monday to you. And what a week is going to be. I feel it in my bones that it's going to be an exciting week. Of course, the markets got off. The paper markets did some incredible, up 500 points again today. But gold, we were able to get 780 out of gold at 1,324. Silver was up 20 cents today at $16.63. Platinum was up $7 at $975, and palladium was up $9 at $988. The USDX today was trading a little bit weaker, 0.28 at 90.13. Crude oil, 59.37, up 0.17. And the paper markets today, they were up over 500 points, settled back a little bit, not much, 408 points on the Dow, 24,599. The NASDAQ was up a little over 1.5% at up 107 points, 6,981. And the S&P was up 36 points at 2,655. The 10-year yield today, we're going to talk a little bit about this, 2.86%, up 0.03, and the euro, of course, was stronger, 0.33 at 1.23 at 123. Japan was down big, a little, almost a 2.33, well, a little over 2.33%. Everything else was a little bit in the green. We're still looking at the fear and greed index down at 10, so it popped up a couple points from the low that we saw last week, and you're still seeing Bitcoin hovering below 9,000. And I guess there was some headlines in the news before we get to the Dow. I mean, the big headline today was Vanessa Trump. I guess it's Donald Jr.'s. His wife was hospitalized after a suspicious letter with some white powder. I don't think they've even... there's no reports as far as, you know, what the mysterious powder was inside. It was postmarked from Boston and at 10 a.m. at the East 54th Street home of her mother, Bonnie Hayden. I guess that's when she opened the envelope. And it's kind of interesting that it was sent to her mother's address. Who in the heck would even know who her mother, do you know who her mother is?
I don't.
I guess now in the world of technology and the internet, I suppose it's probably fairly easy to find these things out. Yeah. But
it's probably a Kardashian.
What? What? Hey, how's that come into play?
Just trying to be a hip culturalist, Melody.
Oh, is that what you're trying to be, huh?
There you go.
Let's see, and there's some other things. We'll talk about Iran and so forth a little later on in the program, but we're going to get back to the Dow. So just as a refreshing recap of last week, certainly not refreshing if you're owning paper, mm-hmm. but Dow and the S&P both pulled back about 5.2% last week. Those were the worst weekly declines since 2 years ago, January of 2016. You had the NASDAQ dropped a little over 5%, and that was the biggest one-week pullback since February 2016. And the Dow closed more than 1,000 points twice last week and rose more than 300 points in two other trading days. And
crazy.
You also, pardon?
Crazy.
It is. I mean, it truly is. And that, and you know what? This is what's really keeping people, you know, just like the deer in the headlights. They're not used to seeing this type of volatility. Well, you know, going back to the Great Recession, they don't know if they should they don't know what to do. I can't say that old saying on the air. I don't know if you know which one I'm referencing.
I think some of us know where you're headed there.
Well, I won't go there, but it does have something to do with eyesight. But the Dow closed more than 1,000 points lower twice last week and rose more than 300 points in two other trading days. And the S&P 500 posted greater moves than 1% in four of five trading days last week. You know, you have all these analysts that are talking about it looks like these markets are in a corrective phase rather than the start of a bear market. Well, that still remains to be seen. There's really no triggers yet that you can – or any – we. Normally, when you have trillions of dollars that are lost in these markets, Dave, it has some sort of impact somewhere. Mm-hmm. Somewhere, someone goes under, you know, because they weren't hedged. Something happens, even to a small degree, even if it's and it's nothing. And it's just been so quiet on these moves, on this volatility that we've really seen. Like there's no impact. Oh, the market goes up and down, you know, it's no big deal. But it is a big deal.
Yeah, only if you were trading against volatility in this market, you know, in which case, if you're the owner of shares in a couple of those VIX funds, you might not be in existence in the next couple of days.
Yeah, but we haven't heard or any, you know, anyone talking about anything other than just it's, you know, just volatility.
It's
and we
eerie.
Hear, and we hear that ice. And you know, just the, you know, just, they just all the talk is just volatility.
It is eerie.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
The calm before the storm.
Perhaps.
It's interesting. The Financial Times of London mentioned this morning, or over the weekend, excuse me, that global markets are entering a new era of volatility as the world adjusts to higher interest rates. That after a decade of what they call ultra-loose monetary policy on the global scene. So after Wall Street's worst week in 6 years, Melody, the Times pointed out over the weekend that we're approaching the end of an era of tranquility and the beginning of the age of instability. It's upon us. Bridgewater Investment said last week's turbulence is set to continue. They said there's been a lot of complacency built up in the market over a long time. So many of us don't think this shakeout will be over in a matter of days. We'll probably have a much bigger shakeout coming.
I read earlier today that the 10-year Treasury yield rose to 2.902, and it's really approaching that 3 level. It's the highest level in more than 4 years. The 30-year bond yield rose to its highest level since March 14th, and it went as high as 3.215%. So everyone is expecting Wednesday's Consumer Price Index, the CPI, for January to validate fears that inflation is ramping up. Investors expect the CPI growth of 0.3% month over month and 1.9% year over year. And, you know, it's now everybody is focused on inflation. You have all these analysts, this Robin Griffiths. I mean, this is the same things we've been telling folks for years and years and years. Inflation fears in the current state of the bond market are not offering investors a safe option that they usually have when the stock prices come down. And certainly the safest haven to be, the safest option to be, of course, is gold and silver. And I think people will realize that they no longer, that tranquility, the sea of tranquility is evaporating and evaporating quickly. And, you know, they will turn to gold, and we just have to be patient until they do.
Indeed. You know, on a related economic note, Melody, U.S. consumers said they expect to see the fastest wage growth in several years, that according to a monthly Federal Reserve Bank of New York survey. Consumers polled expected earnings to rise over 2.7% in the coming year, and that's the most since data collection began in 2013. The New York Fed survey of consumer expectations was released earlier today. Now, January was only the third month in the survey's 56-month history where expected wage growth topped expected consumer price inflation, which fell slightly to 2.71%.
But isn't most of that these consumers that were polled, aren't they expecting their earnings to rise based mainly on the tax reform?
Oh, I'm sure of that. I'm sure that's got to be a lot of it.
So
if not most of it.
Yeah, so again, there's this optimism, this wishful thinking. And it's like it baffles me why people just can't see through what is really taking place. The February Labor Department report, which shows the U.S. average hourly earnings rose 2.9% from a year earlier in January, and that's marking the fastest pace of the expansion. Well, you know, that was January. Wouldn't that have an impact? All the bonuses? I mean, I don't know if that plays, you know, into that or not in compiling these, you know, numbers as far as the hourly earnings or the raises that they received or even the tax reform. Would that have an impact on the hourly earnings?
Well, I believe, memory serves me correctly, if the bonuses were issued and received in January, then they in fact should have shown up in that January report. Now the effects of the tax cuts, the individual tax cuts, I believe aren't slated to kick in until February, so that shouldn't be technically any part of the average hourly earnings. Certainly, I think getting back to the survey and expectations, job wage growth expectations, I'm sure that the tax cut has a lot to do with that.
So when they release the February earnings then the taxes would then again, you're right, it would for January, but it will for February.
I believe you're right.
So we're
Yeah, we'll start to see the first effects of the tax cuts.
Now, let me ask you a question. Does that continue throughout the year once these numbers are marked? Or because the Fed's looking for clues about whether or not the wage growth will continue to accelerate and, you know, maybe put some pressure on consumer prices?
Yeah, my belief is that February will start to see the effect. By March and April, I believe we should have seen the bulk of the effect of the tax cuts. Now, you know, some of it has to, you know, depends upon how often a person gets paid, weekly, biweekly, monthly, quarterly. Obviously, their partnerships may get paid quarterly or at the end of the year. But I think the bulk of, since, you know, the vast majority of workers in America, you know, are on a weekly or biweekly payroll, I would think by the end of March, certainly April, we'll have seen, you know, largely the effects of the tax cuts, the individual tax cuts anyway.
All right, so as we wait for the Labor Department, they're looking for the wage growth and perhaps to see some upward pressure on the prices, consumer prices, as they contemplate raising interest rates a couple of times this year under Jerome Powell.
Yeah, and, the Labor Department report reportedly triggered some of the most severe stock market volatility in years, with some investors reassessing whether equity valuations could handle a steeper rise in interest rates that a pickup inflation could push the Fed to deliver this year. As we've been reporting, Melody, the yield on 10-year U.S. Treasury notes has risen almost half a percentage point since just the beginning of the year. The results of the New York Fed poll also showed 39% of consumers felt their personal finances were in better shape than a year ago, and 46% of them expected to be in better shape in a year, both marking the highest levels in data from 2013.
And you know what? A lot of analysts and financial news, mainstream medias, they're going to tell you, you know, this won't continue. You know, we're going to, you know, get back onto the same path that we were. We've been telling folks, you know, this is going to continue. Volatility is here. It's going to stay. It's back with a vengeance. And you can't expect it to go away anytime soon. I mean, this is what this program is all about. They're going to try to tell all your financial analysts are going to tell you to stay calm. I don't want to stay calm when things are volatile, because that's how you lose money. You can't stay calm. And the more they tell you to stay calm, the more you should react and say, no, I'm out of here, folks. Thanks a lot. But I want to get something that I don't have to worry about it through this volatility. I don't think what we're entering is normal. But yet this is what they're going to tell you. That everything is normal, stay calm, this happens every so often, every 13 months or so. Well, tell that to the folks in, you know, 1929, 1987, and the 90s, and 2000, and the Great Recession. I spoke with a woman today. She told me, Dave, that in 2008, she lost $150,000 in the markets.
Not
which is
fun.
A lot, not fun. And I asked her, I said, have you recouped it? She says, no. She says, not all of it. She says, I got out of the markets before I, you know, before we had this last peak. She says, because I know where it's heading. And I didn't want to lose what I did gain. So she says, I put it in gold. And she says, I don't worry about it anymore. I don't have to look at the markets. I don't have to worry about volatility. And she says, and when things do what they did in 2000, she says, I can get back in. When the markets crash to 6,000 again, she says, I could get back in. And I says, that's what people don't understand. Protect what you have. You can always go back into the markets. You can always go back into the markets. But so stocks sold off last week. We have a good day today. The S&P saw its steepest 10-day decline from all-time highs, breaking the record in 1986. And yeah, we're going to be heading into a break here in just a few seconds. We can finish up this segment and this topic, and then we'll be moving on to something else right after this short break.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And I want to encourage you to visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for a weekly newsletter. And for all of those who have signed up for our newsletter, I'm a little delayed in getting it out, so it might be tomorrow before it actually goes out. And my apologies. Just a lot of things going on, trying to get caught up with some paperwork, and so that just got on the back burner. We're still all working on the website, and I don't want to bring that to your attention again, but had a big powwow yesterday with several computer folks, and we're looking to get back on track on that too, and all on the same page. So we will be bringing that to you shortly. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And going into the third segment, I'm going to talk about $20 gold pieces. I mean, again, folks, just terrific buys. I'll have a special for you on, I mean, usually in Mint State 63. $20 St. Gaudens and Mint State 64, $20 St. Gaudens. There's only a $40 spread between the two. Mint State 64 Saints is really a bargain at that price. Big spread between 5 64s and 65s on the Saints. You're looking about $200 spread between a 4 and a 5. So really, the 64 Saint is the deal. So I'll be bringing you those prices. Maybe we'll even include a Silver Eagle in that special price for you. Brand new 2018 American Silver Eagle. So, but you're going to have to wait until we come back from this next break. So we're going to talk now about skilled workers and companies trying to establish training programs to fill jobs. The National Association of Manufacturers, Jay Timmons, says that there's been a short of skilled workers. I don't know if I buy that, Dave. I know you're supposed to believe the National Association of Manufacturers. I just find it hard to believe we have a lack of skilled workers in this country. I do agree that we don't have enough focus on some of these tech schools. I agree with that. So I guess it's... Go ahead.
Oh, no, that's okay. No, I think it's... In some ways, it's a matter of semantics to me. To say that there's a shortage of skilled workers per se, you know, would question that as well. I think the rightly skilled workers or skilled workers with the right skills, I buy that there's a shortage, if not a critical shortage, of the right kinds of skilled workers. you know, and I mean, just generally speaking, to the extent that someone coming out of a 20 to 30 year career, baby boomer, is now looking to start a second career. A lot of them are finding, for example, that their technical skills are below where at least the new companies they're trying to get hired by are looking for. So I think maybe in that respect, that's a key. You know, unemployment's at a decades long low of 4.1%, and apparently drifting lower. American manufacturers, according to the National Association of Manufacturers, have reported 364,000 vacancies, and they say they're going to need to fill 3.5 million jobs by 2025. Timmons from the NAM says 2 million of those vacancies may go unfilled because of this chronic skills shortage. I don't know. Until now, American companies have seemed to be largely waiting for workers themselves to obtain the right skills, you know, on their own in college, at vocational schools, or prior jobs. But that hasn't worked, Melody. And Timmons, who spoke this morning in Troy, Michigan, is telling companies that they need to be proactive now when it comes to worker training. So these jobs are fillable. The key is that it's up to the business community, not individuals themselves, to provide training necessary to fill these jobs. They point to two key issues that are creating a problem here. One is long searches. It can take 70 days, they say, to hire a technician, and 90 days for an engineer. And the other one is stigma. Companies have to battle a misperception, particularly among young people, that manufacturing jobs are dirty, dark, and dangerous. Timmons said modern manufacturing isn't that. In fact, it's sleek and technology-driven. So that's an interesting tidbit of news, Melody, I think.
You know, that is some. You know, that is true, because, you know, when we think of the baby boomers, we do think that, you know, it is, you know, you're standing on the line, and, you know, you're making these. I mean, I worked on the line when I was very young with Motorola. I couldn't work in a factory. I mean, one of my first jobs was in Lebanon, Pennsylvania, when I was probably 16. I worked. I lasted a week in a. You know, we made in a clothing factory. So I didn't last. It's hard work. And I think to some degree we have gotten a little soft, and a lot of us just aren't cut out for it. I wasn't cut out for it. I couldn't do it. And but yeah, I guess to some degree there is a point that it can take, you know, the proper training, as you said. You're having the wrong trying to match the wrong people up to the wrong job. So that's interesting, very interesting.
It is.
When the next recession comes, many people who lose their jobs will have a harder time getting unemployment insurance, an important lifeline for most Americans. In several states, these people could, you know, have to take
a urine
test.
Analysis.
A urine analysis, thank you. To qualify, I know a lot of people who agree with this. Those who don't get benefits will have to settle for the sort of fake jobs our economy produces in abundance, a contract job in an Amazon fulfillment center, or a gig with no health or other benefits, delivering groceries for those who are still working. So it will be tough when this next recession, it's not a matter of if the next, it is when the next recession comes, and that is just around the corner.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Is it the next few years? Is it the next few months? We don't know, but the signs are flashing brightly right in front of us. I mean, maybe it's going to happen as a result of you know, the inflation that some say are going to result from the tax cuts. Maybe it'll have something to do with the extraordinary consumer debt that we've been talking about, Melody. what do we say, $18 trillion a couple of weeks ago. We don't know what the cause is going to be exactly, or cause is, but we do have some idea of how Americans are going to experience the next sustained economic slump. Meanwhile, in that respect, there are certain holes that Congress and state legislatures across the country have created in the safety net that are going to be filled by so-called alternative work arrangements, gigs, as particularly the younger generation is referring to them. And these offer fewer protections for workers than full-time job. By design, Melody, some are saying America is ill-prepared for the next recession in terms of worker protection in particular, but it's way beyond that, and it's going to be ugly. And Melody, we ain't got no alibi.
That reminds me of a song, Dave. Is that
well, isn't that a coincidence?
Isn't that a coincidence? But, well, you know, it's the National Bureau of Economic Research that tells us when a recession begins. And it usually starts after economic activity has reached its peak, right? When things are better than ever is when they're about to get worse. The decline in business conditions has to affect the whole economy. It can't just be a single sector slump like the one Amazon has wrought among retailers. But you won't know the recession has started until later, because the National Bureau of Economic Research, NBER, waits until the government has finished its data revisions. And that can happen over periods of months. And it wasn't until 2008 that the organization announced that the last recession had begun in 2007. I mean, that just cracks me. Kind of like a flu shot. Yeah, we're going to give you a flu shot. But the diseases of last year, not this year.
There's anyway, got to be like a in the next chapter of the macroeconomics textbook, you know, that something called the retroactive recession, you know.
I know it.
Classic.
We have had, 11 major recessions since World War II, and the current economic expansion began in mid-2009, but, you know, it took trillions and trillions of stimulus in order to keep the whole system from collapsing. And this is the third longest in history, and it can't last forever.
It can't?
It can't.
Well, expansions don't just die of old age, Melody. I mean, one thing that can trigger recessions is the Federal Reserve hiking interest rates to quell inflation, for example. And as we know, the Fed's currently in the process of raising rates, but inflation is still low, less than 2%, and most economists see no cause for concern in the immediate future, though they're not exactly great at predicting what's going to happen either. Mark Zandi, who we like to quote, he's an economist with Moody's Analytics, said, when wage and price pressures develop, that's when the clocks start to tick. An upward pressure on wages, as we mentioned earlier, has begun to develop. The official unemployment rate is still falling, and it's now been at or below 5% for about 2 years. And that's a level at which, inflation is triggered, or inflation fears are normally triggered. But, Melody, economists can point to a range of other measures. We've talked about all of them, such as reduced labor force participation, all of it suggesting that the labor market is still somewhat out of whack.
Well, it certainly is. I mean, even if it's, you know, the markets are going to be adjusting to no more, you know, free money when the feds begin to increase the interest rates. You have, I think there wasn't it Japan? And you should ask James Corbett this week. I think they just, Abe reappointed the finance minister, I believe, this week or last mm-hmm. week. And mm-hmm. They are going to continue, with their stimulus. I mean, they're not going to stop. and it's just so
the Bank of Japan.
The Bank of Japan, yeah. So, and they're not the only country. You have all of England doing it, the European Union, you have the US doing it in a roundabout way. And so these interest rates, many of them will say once they get above 3%, it's going to choke It's going to choke the economy.
I wonder if we should tell listeners in a future show this week or next about the mysterious goings on at LIBOR, the London International Bank offered rates that we learned last fall have been a charade, and how in particular the European Union is beginning to deal with the aftermath of that. So maybe we'll look into that and try and turn the light bulb on for listeners in a future show.
All right, sounds great. Because we've had Rob West on here, and we'll have to get Rob back on. He's done some extensive research into the LIBOR rate scandal, and I was one that, you know, it's just amazing how large that was. And, you know, a few people get smacked on the hand, a few people get fined a couple billion dollars, which is nothing. Maybe one or two went to jail. I'm not even sure anyone has gone to jail on that one. And it's just to get an update on that.
Virtually no one knows about it. That's
a lot know, but no one's done anything about it. You know, nobody, because to me, I believe that if you make a contract on fraud, those contracts are null and void. So that's the way I look at it. But they can't have all those contracts come unwound, not when it's such a, you know, where everything is tied to it, and you're talking just trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars. But
yeah.
Anyway, you know, Zandi also said, you know, another reason that we could be seeing a recession is a huge tax cut that increases the size of the federal deficit. Of course, everyone's talking about that. Everybody's talking about, you know, everything that was passed last week, how our debt is going to be increasing. Everyone's looking at a $35 trillion if we make, which I don't think we're going to make it. We're not going to make it out of this year. But just for sake of conversation and discussion, you know, you have governments, you have everyone reporting that in 10 years we're going to have a $35 trillion debt. In 2027, I guess, 10 years, a $35 trillion debt. So, but that doesn't, you know, it is just really, truly amazing. But as Andy said, if tax cuts are deficit finance, that is going to juice the economy and it will overheat, significantly adding or raising the odds of a recession early in the next decade. I mean, I'm sorry, Dave, but what are these? Early in the next decade? Are you kidding me? What are they smoking? Oh, they must live in Colorado or California or
somewhere over the rainbow. Bluebirds fly.
Yeah, oh my, oh my.
Yeah, really. I know we're getting ready to go into another break. So we'll start or finish our discussion about the next recession after these messages.
Thank you, Dave. You took us into an ad.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. Told you I was going to bring you a special Mint State 64 $20 Saint Gaudens. Now, these are the ones that the most common dates, the common year dates are going to be the 1908 No Matos, and also maybe 1924s, 1927s. You might get a 28, maybe a 25, but they're even getting a little more rare. So you'll get a little mixed dates on those. But these are the Mint State 64 St. Gaudens gold coins, $20 gold pieces, pre-1933s, as I just explained. You will also receive a 2018 silver eagle in that special. Two coins, you get free shipping, so you will have to pay just a little bit of shipping on one coin, but if you purchase more than one, all your shipping is included, and that total package is $1,460. That's $1,460 for one MS64 $20 St. Gaudens and a free silver eagles. Purchase two of them and you'll receive free shipping. And you would also receive two silver eagles. So for each coin that you purchase, you get a free silver eagle. Now, I quoted out what an American bullion coin would cost, and the price of those would be $1,370. There's only a $90 spread between a bullion gold coin and a Mint State 64 $20 gold pieces. I mean, my heavens, you're moving up how many grades? One, two, six, seven, eight grades, starting with the very fine condition. From a gold bullion coin all through the $20 gold pieces until you get to a Mint State 64 for $90.
Jesus.
And you get a free silver eagle in there, and they're priced at $20. So really, the spread is much less. It's $70.
Does your accountant know you're doing this?
No, don't tell. Don't tell them. And so again, folks, 1-800-375-4188. The big question is, well, Melody, why is there no spread? Well, look,
Melody.
Yes.
Why is there no spread?
Well, let me tell you why there is no spread.
Thank
there's
you.
There's no spread because buying has been, it's been quiet. The markets have been quiet. There's no panic in the markets. There's fear. There's fear of the volatility. They've certainly brought out the damage control speaking heads to keep panic from entering these markets. But there's no panic. There's no rush to remove your 401s or to pull money out of your 401s. There has been an increase, and we have taxes. People are rolling over some of their paper IRAs into gold and silver IRAs. I've seen that increase here at Discount Gold and Silver. But there really hasn't been any, you know, Melody, I want to get out of my paper yet. And when it does come this time, it's going to be a madhouse. So that's why we've seen the premiums drop. And this is the time you buy them. This is a market that's telling you, I'm at a low. The downside risk to these coins are just minimal. It's almost like, what do you got to lose? Nothing. Nothing. And what do you have to gain? Well, during the Great Recession, about 2010, 2011, the Mint State 64 $20 gold pieces were selling for about $2,700. They're an incredible buy. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. You can buy one or 100. Free shipping after two. So what's next, Dave?
Good deal. Why don't we finish our discussion of the recession and then move on and summarize the president's proposed budget and his infrastructure plan, both of which were rolled out this morning. Melody, states are still smarting from the Great Recession. At the beginning of last year, only 21 state unemployment trust funds had achieved what the U.S. Department of Labor considers a minimum level of solvency. And if they can't catch up before layoffs hit from the next one, there's going to be a lot of political pressure to follow the new path that other states have taken to reduce benefits. Lawmakers in Kentucky, for example, which has a poor solvency rating, are currently considering proposals to make the state's unemployment system more like Florida's, which is considered one of the most restrictive. It's an old pattern. After the recession of the early 1980s, changes in state benefits helped reduce the proportion of unemployed workers receiving compensation from 50% at the beginning of that decade to 37% just 10 years later. Josh Bivens, who's an economist with the Economic Policy Institute, admittedly a liberal think tank, said the country isn't well prepared for the next recession. But Congress and the president might be more interested in your analysis than in unemployment compensation. Since around 2011, lawmakers at state and federal levels been trying to make drug tests a requirement for both welfare, food stamps, and unemployment insurance. Although Republicans in Congress did scrap that regulation last year, we'll see what happens as this year rolls on. Melody?
Well, let's go ahead and move on. Let's talk a little bit about the White House releasing two documents today, the budget and its much touted infrastructure plan. According to some observers, Americans should file both documents under the genre of science fiction.
I like that.
Well, you know, again, everybody knows how I feel, and it really is. It's a $4.4 trillion spending plan. Are you sure it's 4.4 or 1.4? 4.4 seems like an awful lot. I've actually heard that the 1.4, I think it's 1.5 trillion. I think what they, if it is, it's just a drop in the bucket of what's needed in order to do the infrastructure that really needs to be done. But Axios is reporting that the budget is dead on arrival anyway, and the infrastructure plans to be dead because of the larger crisis facing the Republican Party. So
it's 4.4 trillion. That probably includes the trust fund, Social Security, and possibly and Medicare.
Okay. 4.4, amazing. The infrastructure, as I said, appears to be dead on arrival. So what say you?
Well, members of Congress are publicly applauding the plan. A lot of members are, thumbing their noses up at it at the moment. Few want a midterm, especially, both sides of the aisle, particularly incumbent Republicans, don't want a midterm year spend-a-thon when they're marching toward a $1 trillion deficit already this year. House Freedom Caucus Chair Mark Meadows said, "I think the budget deal passed last week hurts the chances for an infrastructure package unless you use the money we're just now spending. I think there's not going to be the appetite to continue to add additional monies without real offsets. And you know, Melly, it's just not the conservative House Freedom Caucus members who worry about the mushrooming debt. Sources say that Speaker Paul Ryan has zero interest in juicing the debt even more with a massive infrastructure package, which is contained within this budget proposal. You know, last week's Republican Study Committee meeting, members vented about, you know, the burgeoning debts and deficits. Republican Study Committee Chair Mark Walker called the national debt a moral problem, not a financial problem. And that was even before Republicans passed the budget bill that put the debt on steroids.
Moral. They don't have anything. They don't even know what moral is anymore. But anyway.
It's relative.
Yeah, I guess it is. I guess it is. Oh, I mean, it. Anyway, that's another day, another story, another program. But do we have any of the highlights of the budget items that were identified by the MB?
There's. I mean, the whole thing is laid out in the budget document, which is available online at whitehouse.gov. According to details released by the Office of Management and Budget, some of the key budget items are, you know, rolling back financial regulations that were put in place during the last administration, mainly to respond to the 2008 financial crisis, imposing spending reforms to supposedly cut deficits by $3 trillion over 10 years. Now, that is, I guess, technically below the $7 trillion that the budget proposals themselves, you know, would already add to the national debt. So I guess they're saying, you know, the budget as presented would add $7 trillion to the national debt over the next 10 years. And without some spending reforms they're proposing, it would be another $3 trillion. So onward and upward to $35 trillion, Melody.
I guess.
There are $200 billion over the next decade to fund the president's $1.5 trillion infrastructure plan. There's $21 billion, $23 billion, I beg your pardon, for border security and immigration enforcement programs, and, you know, including a lot of money to hire additional immigration agents. Almost $3 billion to offset detention costs, and $18 trillion over the next 2 years to build a southern border wall. Add to that $17 billion more to combat opioid addiction. I believe that's in addition to that which was in the continuing resolution just passed, and another $85-plus billion in discretionary funding to provide medical care and other services to veterans. Yeah. I know you've been following the infrastructure plan, Melody. We summarized a leaked draft, you know, in last week's financial survival. Do you have any other details about the actual plan released this morning?
Well, the plan includes $200 billion in federal funds that are intended to stimulate more than $1.5 trillion in spending, mostly from local and state governments and private entities over the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. And again, we go back to the state governments, local and state. Where are they getting any money? So the feds are going to spend $200 billion to stimulate the local and state governments for $1.5 trillion. Yeah, good luck. They can't even pay their pension plans, or they're all underfunded on their pension funds. How in the heck are they going to come up with? And I'll tell you what, if I was supposed to get a pension from one of these governments, and all of a sudden that money is going to infrastructure, I'd be a little upset. But in a letter addressed to Congress at the beginning of the proposal, lawmakers were asked to act soon So they're looking to stimulate at least $1.5 trillion in new investment over the next decade, shorten the approval process for projects to 2 years or less, focus on infrastructure needs for rural areas, encourage training for American workers, create opportunities for state and local governments to invest in large-scale infrastructure projects. So,
I love how that's worded.
Yeah. Create opportunity. So does that mean the taxpayers are just going to pay for it?
It's wild stuff. You know, the plan represents the president's opening pitch and what's already shaping up to be what we're sure is going to be a long and complex and just quite possibly an unwinnable debate in Congress over how best to shore up the nation's infrastructure.
The largest single piece of the White House plan is a proposed $100 billion that would be made available to the states and municipalities in the form of matching funds for infrastructure projects. Federal funding, however, would be capped at 20% of the overall cost of any given project, still leaving the cities and states responsible for the other 80%.
Yeah, you know, that's a complete reversal of current policy where the vast majority of federally funded projects, highway projects, are a prime example, where they get 80% of their money, their funding, from the federal government, and the remaining 20 from affected state and local governments. You know, typically all from the state, the 20%, that is, sometimes 15 from the state and 5 from local governments. That's just nuts.
Well, there was a few more. Maybe we can bring them up, or maybe we'll. I still have time to put them in the newsletter.
Hey,
tomorrow. So
there we go.
Thank you, Dave, for joining me today. We'll be back tomorrow with Rich Paul. Please be safe out there, ladies and gentlemen, and God bless. Bye bye.
That's too bad.